Hello, and welcome to New World Witchery's Folk Magician's Notebook episode for June 2022. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend that you also pick up a copy of a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, the Welland's Witch's Datebook, or your local Farmer's Almanac. Let's take a look at the moon for June 2022. The full moon this month is on June 14th in Sagittarius. It's commonly called by a wide variety of names, including the strawberry moon, the rose moon, the green corn moon, and the mead or honey moon. The new moon comes in on June 28th in the sign of Cancer, both lunar and solar Cancer, in fact. Some notable astrological dates. The month of June starts off in Cancer during the waxing moon, making it a good time to get into the garden. Mulching, composting, fertilizing, and planting are all strongly favored during the first through the third of the month, and it's also a good time for boosting ongoing spell work to keep it refreshed. We switch into Leo and Virgo as we get into the first quarter moon, which is a good time for clearing out garden beds and tending to ornamental garden denizens like flowers and grasses. It's also a time to get rid of things that you don't need, such as old spell ingredients, and also to give yourself a little preening time to really show off your best side. And I'm not just saying that because my birthday is on the 5th, I promise. Moving into the mid-month and towards the full moon, the emphasis should be on pruning and keeping the best parts of your garden in peak health. Magically, that may mean reevaluating old spells and putting them to rest, or refreshing them with new ingredients too. The moon's waning takes us through some of the more introspective parts of the month, and it's a good time to let things do their work with minimal input from you. However, it's also a good time to pay attention and watch the signs that you get from the plants and animals you see in your world. Doing some foraging or wildcrafting can be good at this point, especially as you get into the summer solstice and midsummer area, when there are often bits of folklore associated with what to harvest. So St. John's wort is usually harvested on midsummer, for example, and there are a number of fairy-associated plants like mugwort, roses, meadowsweet, verbena, all of that that you can harvest around that midsummer, summer solstice period. We end the month going from Gemini to Cancer to Leo, echoing where the month began, and giving you a time to both plan for the next phase of your gardening and either exchange some ideas about magical work with other like-minded folk, or enjoy some showier spell work like glamours and mirror spells. Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. The playing card of the month is the King of Diamonds. He's a wise figure, someone who is good with money and resources. He can represent a bank or even a civil trial as well, and is a figure who lives the life of the mind. He likes to think extensively about the world and treats most challenges as a puzzle waiting to be solved. He's not entirely cold and dispassionate, although he may come off as a bit clinical at times. Mostly, he wants to help you find solutions to problems and help guide you through tricky moments of life, but if you're looking for someone to just listen to those problems, he can be a little off-putting. When balanced by the sensual nature of the Queen of Diamonds in a reading, he can represent feelings of being fully stimulated and engaged with the world, both intellectually and bodily. Paired with cards like the Eights, he likely means there's a need to talk out a particular issue in order to find a good solution. The tarot card of the month is the Magician. This is often a favorite card for many readers because there's so much going on. The Magician wears robes and sort of a crown and has one hand raised while another points to a table full of tools in front of them. Over their head, a symbol of infinity swirls. This is a person who is trying to harness and work with enormous power, but who does so in simple human ways. They have each of the minor arcana suit representations at their disposal and are elevating a wand in many standard Rider-Waite-Smith depictions, emphasizing control and reason. The Magician is the card of someone deeply embedded in magical thinking, someone who may tune out the real world in pursuit of the greater things, and so there's a risk that comes with that work. They stand at a crossroads between realms, between elements, and they live to be a conduit of change and transformation. It's worth remembering, of course, that such work always changes the person doing it, And so the alchemical process of magic transforms us, too. Seeing the magician in a reading indicates creativity, willpower, and ambition, but also the possibility of losing control unless balance is maintained. The folk myth divination of the month, we're looking at some wedding-based divinations. Now, the June full moon is sometimes called the mead moon or the honeymoon because it was a time for making that honey-based boozy beverage. It also happened to be a big month for weddings, and still is the top month for them in most cases, which may or may not have to do with the abundance of mead bubbling away in its tuns. So, this time I thought we'd look at some divinations that have to do with weddings and marriage from a variety of folk traditions. Start with dreams. Dreaming of a funeral means that you will attend a wedding, according to American folklore. Similarly, dreaming of a corpse portends a marriage to come. You can also coerce a dream about a future spouse through a few different methods. One is to boil an egg, remove the cooked yolk, and fill the cavity with salt. Eat that before bed, and you will dream of someone offering you water. That person is to be your future spouse. You can also count 7 stars before going to bed and supposedly dream of a prospective marriage partner that way. If you find a 4-leaf clover and put it in a Bible, then the person you meet while carrying it will be that future spouse. Placing holly leaves named for potential lovers under your pillow also reveals the future. In the morning, whichever leaf turned over will be the name of your betrothed. Finally, you can look to your nails for a clue about your romantic future. However many white spots you have on them tells you how many lovers you'll have in your life. For our proverb of the month, try not to use so much candlelight as it will burn the saint, nor so little as it will leave him in the dark. Our folk or fairy tale for the month is known as the Queen Bee. It's found in several different versions of the collections of the Brothers Grimm fairy tales. The version I'm reading here is adapted from one published in 1905 by M. Edwardes, translated by E. Taylor, called Grimm's Fairy Tales. The Queen Bee. 2 king's sons, once upon a time, went into the world to seek their fortunes. But they soon fell into a wasteful and foolish way of living so that they could not return home again. Then their little brother went out to seek for his brothers, but when he'd found them, they only laughed at him to think that he, who was so young and simple, should try to travel through the world when they, who were so much wiser, had been unable to get on very well. However, they all then set out on their journey together, and at last came to an anthill. The 2 older brothers would have pulled it down in order to see how the poor little ants in their fright would run about and carry off their eggs, but the little brother said, "Let the poor things enjoy themselves. I will not suffer you to trouble them." And so on they went. And they came to a lake where there were many ducks swimming about. The 2 older brothers wanted to catch 2 and then roast them, but the youngest said, "Let the poor things enjoy themselves, you shall not kill them." Next they came to a bee's nest in a hollow tree, and there was so much honey that it ran down the trunk. And the 2 older brothers wanted to light a fire under the tree and kill the bees so as to get their honey, but the youngest held them back again and said, "Let the little insects enjoy themselves, I cannot let you burn them." At length, the 3 brothers came to a castle, and as they passed by the stables, they saw fine horses standing there. But all the horses were of marble, and no man was to be seen. Then they went through all the rooms till they came to a door on which there were 3 locks. But in the middle of the door was a wicket, so that they could look into the next room. There they saw a little gray old man sitting at a table, and they called to him once or twice, but he did not hear. However, when they called him a 3rd time, he rose and came out to them. He said nothing, but took hold of them and led them to a beautiful table covered with all sorts of good things. And when they'd eaten and drunk, he showed each of them to a bedchamber. The next morning he came to the eldest and took him to a marble table, where there were 3 tablets containing an account of the means by which the castle might be disenchanted. The 1st tablet said, "In the wood under the moss lie 1,000 pearls belonging to the king's daughter. They must all be found, and if one is missing by the set of sun, he who seeks them will be turned to marble." Well, so the eldest brother set out, and he sought for the pearls the whole day, but by evening he had found not the 1st 100, and so he was turned into stone as the tablet had foretold. The next day, the second brother undertook the task, but he succeeded no better than the first, for he could only find the second 100 of the pearls, and therefore he too was turned into stone. At last came the youngest's turn. He looked in the moss, but it was so hard to find the pearls, and the job was so tiresome, so he sat down upon a stone and cried. As he sat there, the king of the ants, whose life he had saved, came to help him with 5,000 other ants, and it was not long before they had found all the pearls and laid them in a heap. The second tablet said, "The key of the princess's bedchamber must be fished up out of the lake." As the youngest came to the brink of the lake, he saw two ducks, the two whose lives he had saved, swimming about, and so they dove down and soon brought up the key from the bottom. The third task proved to be the hardest. It was to choose out of the three king's daughters the youngest. They were all beautiful, and they were all exactly alike. But he was told that the eldest had eaten a piece of sugar, the next some sweet syrup, and the youngest a spoonful of honey. And so he was to guess who it was that had eaten the honey. Well, then came along the queen of the bees, who had been saved from the fire. And she tried the lips of all three girls. But at last she sat upon the lips of the one who had eaten honey, and so the dwarf knew which was the youngest. And thus the spell was broken, and all who had been turned into stones awoke and took their proper forms. And the youngest brother married the youngest daughter, the best of all the princesses, and was king after her father's death. And his two brothers married the other two sisters, and they all lived happily ever after. In the story of the queen bee, the youngest brother is mocked because he shows compassion and kindness even to creatures that most would simply pass by, if not outright torment the way his older brothers do. There are plenty of stories about how a simple act of mercy or compassion can yield rewards later in life. Take the story of the mouse and the lion, for example, from Aesop's Fables. The lion is amused by the mouse's claim it can help him one day, and so he lets the mouse go, only to later need the mouse to chew him free from a hunter's trap. One of the things I like about the queen bee story, though, is that it doesn't emphasize that the youngest brother expects any rewards. He simply acts from a place of compassion because it's all he knows how to do. Yes, it does reward him in the end, but he would have done all he did anyway simply because it was right. He provides the sweetness needed in the world where bitterness and pain is all too often able to thrive. I often think about a friend of mine who told me about seeing someone walking down a sidewalk after a storm, stopping to pick up earthworms crawling around and placing them back in the grass. It kept him from being stepped on, and he had no idea anyone saw him doing it. And yet that simple act, transmitted to me through someone else, has made me watch the sidewalks after a rainstorm now too, looking for a chance to do a little kindness, even to a wiggly worm. I hope that if you enjoyed the story of the queen bee, you'll also look for ways to bring sweetness into the world this month. I know you will, really, and for that, thank you. We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add some practical elements to your work. This time, since our emphasis has been on sweetness, why not do a honey jar? Now, in truth, the use of honey and sweeteners in magic seems to be fairly pervasive, and we can find honey used in Egyptian rituals thousands of years ago. The honey jar, however, may be a more recent invention, connected to traditions like hoodoo and southern conjure, although it also seems to be practiced well beyond the geographic zones where those systems are most common, too. So why do a honey jar? Well, it's often done as a way to turn someone sweet on you. For some, this means it functions as a sort of love spell, one that makes another person give you a second look or maybe a second chance. For others, they will use this spell in something like a court-based situation to make a judge or jury give them sweetness or compassionate treatment. In my own practice, I've used the honey spell as a way to sweeten prospective employers towards me and to encourage them to think of me in the most positive light possible. To make a honey jar, you need a heat-resistant jar, such as a baby food jar or a mason jar. You'll also need enough honey to fill it, and you can, of course, use sugar, maple syrup, molasses, or other sweeteners if you prefer, or if they're more locally available for you. You then take a paper with a person's name on it, as well as any personal items you might have of theirs, such as a business card, a bit of hair or clothing, etc., and stuff it into the sweetener-filled jar. Depending on how comfortable you are with this, I can also recommend that you push it into the honey with your fingers and then take the fingers out and lick the honey away from them as a way to bind the sweetness of the jar to you. Tell the person you put in the jar, through the jar, not necessarily to their face, although you can do that too if you feel like they'll be okay with it. Tell them that you're putting them in there and that they will think only sweet thoughts of you now, say only sweet words to you, and remember you sweetly at all times. If you want, you can also add some enhancing ingredients like a bit of tobacco and zinc foil for employment work, or a pinch of cloves and cinnamon to help make a friendship stronger, for example. Then seal up the jar and keep it in a secure place, taking it out and shaking it up whenever it needs a boost. Some people also like to burn a candle on the lid, either in a color associated with their desire, like brown for court work or pink for love, or they'll dress the candle with herbs and oils that enhance the spell. If you do this, make sure to put everything on a fireproof surface like a ceramic plate and never leave it burning unattended. You can burn it all at once, like with a birthday or a chime candle, or you can work it over several days. However you work the spell, here's hoping it brings you a little sweetness in your life. Well, that's it for this entry into your New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook for June. Thank you so much for joining us this month, and we hope that you have a wonderful, fantastic, magical, enchanted, and sweet month ahead of you. If you'd like to help support the show and our work, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/newworldwitchery, where you can throw $1 a month or whatever you can afford towards our general pot, our general ante, our honey pot. We'll call it our honey pot. You can put it into our honey pot and help make things a little sweeter for us, and also get some pretty great rewards along the way yourself, too. If you have thoughts on this show or any other, you can always write to us compassandkey@gmail.com. or newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. Both of those will reach us. You can leave us a voicemail at our voice hotline, which is 442-999-4824. That's 442-99-WITCH, if you want to leave us a voice message. You can also check out our sister shows. We've got Myth Taken, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast. If you're interested in Buffy and you want to hear some folklore and occult perspectives on that show, that's one that we recommend. Or you can check out Chasing Foxfire, which is our podcast about folklore and its intersections with other aspects of the world, like medicine, science, history, etc. So both of those are available wherever you can listen to podcasts. So enjoy those if you are interested in that. I think that will about do it for us this month. You can always find us on social medias of various sorts. We'll have stuff in the show notes to link and find us there. But until next time, thanks for listening. Be well.